Hey, welcome to The Conversation. This is Andy Mason, and you're listening to authentic conversations around the messy intersection of faith, family, and business. And happy Labor Day. Today is supposedly a day off here in California, and we can't go outside because the air quality from the smoke is just ridiculous. And then it's about 111 degrees as well, so a interesting day. But bringing about labor, talking about labor, talking about work, talking about productivity, talking about results. Here's just an interesting thing I'm walking through right now. Last week we had the Business of Reformation conference with Heaven and Business. We had a bunch of different speakers really equipping people how to bring about change in your environment, starting with you, and then how to do it really well and last the distance, last the time. One of the things that came out of that is we got to have our guest speaker, Eric Metaxas, who is a New York Times best-selling author and wrote the books William Wilberforce on Dietrich Bonhoeffer and on Martin Luther. And phenomenal, phenomenal stories. But I want to highlight one for you and a question that I asked and how it turned around and smacked me in the head really well. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer was around at the time of World War II. He was incredibly intelligent, a devout, serious follower of Jesus, and a theologian. I mean, his family were intellectuals, aristocrats, you might have said. They had every reason, not necessarily a religious family, but Bonhoeffer grew up with this devotion to Jesus. Amazing. Not only that, you know, his intelligence and his foresight, he could see what was going on. And there were so many times he could have been in and out of the country. He tried to wake up the German church to say what was going on. It's like, wake up, people, crazy. He could see it, but many couldn't. And by the time that the church woke up, it was too late. So many times, or twice in particular, Bonhoeffer was out of the country. So he got out of Germany because of his connections in New York, his connections in England. And both times he chose to go back. In the end, he tried to just disciple people and work from a pastoral theologic side and realized that's not enough. So he wrestles with this whole question, is it okay for a follower of Jesus to be involved in an assassination attempt on Hitler? And very clearly, there's a difference between thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not kill when poor, weak, and vulnerable people are being taken advantage of, standing up and protect and defend. It's why we have the police. It's why we have the military. So Bonhoeffer wrestles with this as a theologian, and eventually realizes the only thing that's going to actually save Germany is to remove Hitler. And so he is a part of the assassination attempt on Hitler that ultimately failed. And he was caught, he was taken to prison, and obviously the process of that, and literally days before the prisoner of war camp or concentration camp that he was in was liberated by the Allies, he was hurriedly trialed and then hung. So he lost his life. Why do I even bring that up? My question was, what if he had chosen to stay in the United States or chosen to stay in England until after the war? Think of all the good that he would have been able to do to contribute to building a country, to building the values, to establishing authentic faith with the heart of the Father, with the integrity, with the character, with the trust, with the resources that he had at his disposal. Wouldn't have that been a fantastic use of a life? So I posed that question to Eric Metaxas and said, now give us a commentary on Bonhoeffer's choice to go back to Germany and eventually be part of this failed assassination attempt compared to you know, what if he'd chosen to stay? You know, did he make the wrong choice? And we're having a discussion about this. I'm thinking, you know, something I wrestle with, the value of a life, the contribution of the life, the potential of a human being and what you could do with your life. And Eric Metaxas floored me with his response. He said, the issue is not about results. It's about obedience and faithfulness. And I mean, I was recentered in a powerful way. Ultimately, Bonhoeffer had a conviction that he needed to be back in Germany with his people. He had a conviction that he needed to stand up and be part of that assassination plot. He had a conviction to follow through, knowing that he could well lose his life. Knowing, I'm sure he wrestled through that. Do I stay? Do I go? Do I engage? Do I lose my life? Wrestled through that, and he made the decision based on what he knew to be right for himself. Externally, it looked like failure. But when you do what you're called to do, it's the right thing to do. It's fascinating. He wrote in his journal just shortly before that, actually one day after the assassination plot failed, he wrote this in his journal. How should one become arrogant over successes or shaken by one's failures when one shares in God's suffering and the life of this world? I am grateful that I have been allowed this insight, and I know that it is only the path that I have finally taken that I was able to learn this. So I am thinking gratefully and with peace of mind about past as well as present things. I'm like, oh my gosh. On the outside, the results are poor. On the outside, it looks like failure. But Bonhoeffer is saying, I count it a privilege to be a part of humanity, of getting my hands dirty. I don't define myself by what you think is failure or success. I base it on sharing in the sufferings of Christ or walking in obedience and faithfulness to him. He says this, as this is the last recorded words before he was hung. He says this, this is the end. For me, the beginning of life. I'm challenged because there's so many things that I can't do right now. I'm challenged because there's so many results right now that don't feel good or look good. I'm restricted in my movements because of COVID. I am restricted in my movements because of smoke from fires and temperatures. We've pivoted and I'm restricted in my office space. I'm restricted in the events that I do. We've converted to online. The results have not been what I want or planned at the start of the year, and it's confronting me. Online, there's less feedback when you're in person and interacting with lots of people. You get this buzz and affirmation, and I'm a words of affirmation person, so I'm getting less feedback. All of that is screaming at my insecurities around my identity based on results. What about you? What's the results that you're getting? Are they telling you what you want to hear, or are they actually pointing out to you there's a gap between your value, how you see yourself, and the things that you're doing in order to obtain an external feedback about value? What's the point? My value is determined by who God says I am. Psalm 139, I'm fearfully, wonderfully made. He's gone into my future. He's gone into my past to protect me from my past mistakes. He knows all things about me and he delights in me. My value is fixed and firm and secure. If my value is based on what happens externally, on the results, then right now there'll be people that has gone crazy, which is why we're seeing an increased level of depression and suicide. But if my value is based in who God says I am, whether I can meet with a congregation on Sunday or not doesn't change who I am. Whether I have to wear a mask or not doesn't change who I am. Whether I have to be an online business or an in-person business doesn't change who I am, whether I get the numbers or don't get the numbers. All of these things are an invitation into a greater sense of identity that doesn't change. I love this. This is what Bonhoeffer said. How should one become arrogant over success or shaken by one's failures when one shares in God's suffering in the life of this world? That when I walk in this world and I engage in humanity and walk as Christ has called me to live, then how could I be discouraged? How could I be upset? How could I be tipped over sideways? Because my identity is secure. It's amazing. I then read this. Christine Kane posted this. Sometimes the biggest sign that you're doing exactly what you should be doing is no one but you and Jesus know that you are doing it. I'll read that again. Sometimes the biggest sign that you are doing exactly what you should be doing is that no one but you and Jesus know you are doing it. Wow. What about you? Do you need external validation? Do you need external results in order to feel good about yourself? With what you are walking through right now, what is success? What have you built your life around? Or have you built your life on nothing other than Christ, so that nothing in this world defines you or takes away from who you are? The greatest success doesn't change you, doesn't move you. And the biggest failure doesn't move you either. I read this also. I am the prodigal son. Every time I search for significance where it cannot be found. What is true success? Faith and obedience. It's what I'm really doing. In the midst of this, I'm reminded of the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the kingdom of Babylon, taken as captives from their homeland, and they refused to bow to the culture around them. They refused to line up with the values of that culture. They say, no, we live by a different set of values. And it doesn't matter what the media says. It doesn't matter what is going on around us. We will not bow to that. We will not be intimidated. We will not hold back. And so when it's found out what they do, the king or the ruler or the governor or whatever you want to say, takes them and burns them, wants to burn them. And brings them and first questions them and says, what are you guys doing? Like, I really like you. You're great, wise counselors. What are you doing? And they say, O king, we cannot bow down before you. We actually believe that our God will deliver us from this fire. But even if he doesn't, we will not bow down to you. I don't believe it was arrogant. I believe it was humble and respectful, but very clear. The king is so offended by their hate speech, by their divisiveness. You call it what you want. He orders that the furnace heated up 7 times hotter and then throws them in. And it says this, and then he looked and behold and said, didn't we throw 3 men in? Isn't there a 4th one? And the 4th one looks like a son of God. And he called them out and made this confession and turned. What's the point? I don't know what you're going through, whether you're in the fire, you're in a flood, you're in a storm, everything's burning around you. The results aren't measuring up. The results don't define you. Who you are on the inside is what defines you. And the bottom line for me is, as I realized and had this realization, there's this great song, There's Another in the Fire. That's really good. But New Testament version of that is Christ in me, the hope of glory. It doesn't matter what happens to my body, what happens externally. I give my best, period, but nothing moves me. I'm on that journey. I'm not there yet. But what I'm starting to realize, there might be a fire around me, but the fire within me is greater, is stronger. There might be a storm outside me, but the thunder that's inside me is stronger. There might be a raging river all around me, but the river of God that lives in me is stronger. There might be uncertainty and restlessness all around me, but I have a peace inside me that is greater. There might be despair and hopelessness all around me, but the hope and the confidence that I have inside me is greater. Greater is He that is in me than anything else around me. And I refuse to allow the external to define who I am. What about you? I want to read this thing again from Bonhoeffer. A hero who gave his life to protect his country. Sure, there may have been a different result if he had saved his life and then helped rebuild Germany afterwards. But you and I are listening to this today because of Bonhoeffer. The books written, the life that he laid down, the inspiration. And when it's all said and done, he doesn't account to you or I. He makes an account before God. So when you stand before God, what would you want him to say? Well done, good and faithful, or something else? This is what Bonhoeffer said. How should one become arrogant over successes or shaken by one's failures when one shares in God's suffering in the life of this world? I am grateful that I've been allowed this insight, and I know that it is only on the path that I have finally taken that I was able to learn this. So I am thinking gratefully and with peace of mind about past as well as present things. This is the end, for me, the beginning of life. I want to encourage you, live with eternity in mind. I bless your week. I bless you with courage and confidence. I bless you with insight. I bless you to see through the veneer of success, the veneer of results, and that you'd establish your life on something that is unmoving. Like David said in Psalm 16, I have set the Lord always before me. Because I'm constantly aware of his presence, his peace, his confidence, his security, that fire within me. Whether I feel it or not, he is with me. Because I'm constantly aware of his presence, I will not be moved. I bless you with wisdom and courage that you will follow what you know you need to do and you would live well.